Shout out to our sponsors, King's Peak Coffee Roasters. Located on 412 South, 7th West in Salt Lake, King's Peak has a wonderful coffee shop and roastery with great atmosphere, delicious coffee, friendly baristas, and plenty of parking. Offering to help anyone willing to learn coffee, King's Peak is the place to go. King's Peak is ethically and sustainably sourced, believing that everyone in the coffee supply chain should be properly supported through fair compensation and powered by real human-to-human relationships. Open Monday through Friday, 7 to 2, and Saturday and Sunday, 9 to 2, you will feel loved the moment you walk through their doors. For any questions or inquiries, or wholesale, visit them at kingspeakcoffee.com or just head on over. Good chance you'll see us there. Until the next coffee, my friends. Shout out to our sponsor, Sugar House Distillery. Handcrafted from grain to glass, Sugar House has been grinding for years to bring us products that are quality over quantity. Just to name a few, their single malt whiskey, rye whiskey, which is our weekday jam, their Boilermaker series, which is a rotating collab within our family, and their canned cocktails, which are so damn good and great for any to-go adventures you have this year. Located in most liquor stores across Utah, or just head over to the distillery located on 2212 South West Temple, Monday through Friday. Tell them we sent you, and they'd love to give you a tour and possible tasting. When you think Sugar House Distillery, think local and made with love. Until the next spirit, my friends. You're listening to The Taste Masters, where we sit down and learn from artists within the world of craft beer, liquor, and various fermentation techniques. Hi, family. I'm here finally in the house of Roha Brewing Company. I'm with two beautiful gentlemen right here, Rob and Carson. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Wow, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Rob, it's been like, what, 4 years since we tried to do this?
Several attempts to make this happen. And actually, I have to leave in about 12 minutes.
I love that's why I'm here. I got roped into it about 6 minutes before.
If you look at our text thread, it's the best text thread of all time. It's like a year's worth of like,
You'd think we're going through a bad breakup.
It's pretty bad, isn't it? We should like post that and be like, this is Rob and David's conversation.
This is our schedule right now.
So Rob, Carson, welcome. I'm so great. Thanks for having me here at the Roha. It's booming right now. It is slam packed shoulder to shoulder here at Roha on a Monday.
Yeah, good. Monday afternoon's pretty slammed usually.
I love it. Yeah, I'm glad you guys are in a great spot. I love this place. I'm going to give you guys a shout out real quick. The Firkin Fest you guys throw here, you're making it quarterly, correct?
I was trying not to abuse the breweries that supply such wonderful and unique firkins, but the feedback I've gotten is make them quarterly. We love this. So we're going to go for it.
I think you should. What's some of the coolest firkins that have come out so far?
Oh, man, that's a good question. The first Firkin Fest, I think it was yours. It was a Christmas. Did you guys do a Christmas ale or something?
Maybe.
Okay.
There's so many Firkins.
There was like a wild Christmas ale that had this great like Cabernet and spice character to it. That was.
Yeah, now you got me thinking.
It.
Probably not. Okay. Can't remember. Shit.
It might have been. I don't know who did it.
But there's so many good Firkins out there.
Yeah, I mean we've had 8 participants every time, including our own, and so everybody comes up with something different and turns out awesome.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, and now it's warm, can we do it outside?
That was the plan for the spring Firkin Festival, but because of the spring we had, it was like still snowing.
It was like a third winter or something, is that what it was?
At least third.
We were in our second mud season.
So if we go outside, can you have more than 8 participants this time?
I think so. I would want to do up to like 15.
Oh, shit.
To try and showcase everybody's, and maybe we'd bust out 2. You know, or if somebody wanted to bring 2. This last time we had a couple of people that wanted to bring 2, and we said, I don't know where we'd put those, so no.
Now you got space for it.
Yeah.
So would you do the whole bar top and then the outside?
Probably, yeah.
That's really cool.
And put, like, line up the patio with, like, as many firkins as we could fit out there.
I love that. It's a really good time. I think the last Firkin Fest I was at, it was just, like, popping. And I think those firkins went. It was fun to watch everyone pop the firkins, too. That's my favorite part.
Yeah.
See which ones are carbonated.
Beer spraying, the beer like squirting out of the top across the room. People are like, why do I have beer on me?
Yeah. Do you still have beer on top of the ceilings? I'm curious.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure there is.
Yeah, we do a firkin every week. And so even if we clean it, you know, you only make it to next Wednesday.
Yeah. So how is the Firkins you guys do on a weekly basis?
They are pretty consistent. Even if the Firkin is meh or phenomenal, people still show up for it. So
nice. And that's every Wednesday, correct?
Every Wednesday, 5 o'clock, we pop a Firkin. Yep.
Nice. Let's blow that up. I think we should more marketing early so we know about that Firkin. What flavors are coming out?
Firkin Hump Day. Yeah, we'll try and get photos out sooner.
Hell yeah, I love it. What's so and about? What's the next few Firkins, Karst, that you have planned?
This week is a apricot dry hopped hazy IPA with cashmere and El Dorado.
Ooh, send me
should
that.
Should be pretty good.
Yeah.
What's a that's Firkin as far as I've got.
You want to do like upcoming? Like you're thinking ahead. Like what's a Firkin you want to just pull out of your pocket? Boom, let's go,
David. We've been doing these for 3 years.
I haven't seen a curry one yet. I haven't seen anything super spicy.
See, we need idea generators like you.
We did a spicy one. We did a tahine mango one, like the dried candies.
Yeah.
But the two components of it, that was pretty good.
See, I think we need like a habanero one.
I have habaneros in the fridge.
Let's go. Then I think we should do an Italian one. Do a little bit of oregano, maybe some pepperoni. See what happens. Put some meat in it.
I think the spaghetti beer has been done.
You're right. Spaghetti beer has been done, but the spaghetti Firkin hasn't been done.
And it was memorable. It was.
So let's make another one like that. Now I'll send you some ideas.
All right. Yeah, they're good. Anytime you think there's a weird beer you want to make.
Let's go.
We've done an Oreo.
Get out of here.
I'd be down for an Oreo blonde.
Yeah, I would do another one.
I want to do a French toast blonde.
Oh.
You were just talking about another one this afternoon.
Ants on a log.
Are you ready?
Ants on a log. I haven't heard that forever.
An ants on a log blonde.
You should do it.
Celery, peanut butter, and some raisins.
Some raisins. Can you do like the chocolate raisinets, though? Give a little chocolate.
We could throw a little chocolate in there.
A celery in a beer. Fuck yeah, it. Let's do it.
That one's going to go. I have blonde going into the tank tomorrow, so that one's actually going to happen.
This makes me really happy. I'll see you in 2 weeks. So, Rob, I'm going to go back to, let's talk about the beginnings of Roja real quick. So how long has this place been here?
Yeah. So we have been here for 6 years.
Yeah.
I would always say that the idea or the concept of this started way before that, like 2015, 2014.
Wow.
I was sort of this nerdy engineer in Salt Lake, just working my day job, but I had a lot of free time and a little bit of extra cash. So way back, like 2007 or 6 or something like that, I went to a beer tasting dinner at Desert Edge.
Oh, sick.
And I got to talking to the head brewer there at the time, and we sort of clashed but hit it off at the same time because we have some rivalry football teams we cheer for. Mm. And I asked him in sort of after several pitchers of beer and some food, I said, do you ever let people volunteer here? And he's like, oh, yeah, sure, come on down. So the next day, this was on a Thursday night, the next day happened to be my day off. We got every other Friday off as an engineer. And so I showed up like 8 a.m. And he scrubs his eye and looks at me. He's like, what are you doing here? I said, well, I'm here to volunteer. He said, okay, well, welcome. And so I volunteered for him for maybe like 3 years on my days off, just showed up, worked whatever job needed to be done, usually like graining out or sometimes just hanging out kind of in his way. And I started kind of talking to him about how to build a craft brewery because I was really into this craft beer community and like I thought it was just the coolest people and the great beer and I was really into it. I'm really avid home brewer, obviously.
Oh, yeah. For how long?
Oh, I've forever until I started building a brewery, and then I haven't homebrewed since, which seems ridiculous. Like
you're
the whole reason
you a homebrew now,
sort of, but like all the fun's. I mean, the fun's still there, sort of, but it's different.
Yeah.
So I was a homebrewer for maybe like 9 years. My wife erroneously bought me a homebrew kit for Christmas, and next thing you know, I'm building shit in the garage, and I got the whole kitchen blowing up, and tubes going everywhere in the house and a keg fridge and aging kegs in the laundry room and just everything that makes your wife feel crazy, you know? So I was talking to the head brewer at Desert Edge, Chris Haas, and I was like, man, I want to build a brewery. And I like this is awesome to me and I got to figure out how to do it. And so I bought some tanks because I sort of negotiated with some people online and got a good deal and they accidentally accepted it. And I was like, well, shit, now I own some tanks. And I stored them for a long time. We don't currently use any of those tanks. We never did anything with any of them except give them to Toasted Barrel.
Oh, hell yeah.
So from there, it kind of grew. Like, I started using Chris as a true consultant and seeing what I should learn and how I could grow this. And eventually it was kind of like, hey, do you want to partner up on a brewery together? And we were like, yeah, sure, let's do this. So fast forward, we bought some equipment. We brought in another partner, and we found this space on Kensington Avenue.
Yeah.
We brought this equipment in. We pieced it all together with a contractor. And at the time when we launched in 2017, if you think back, there were only a handful of breweries in Utah, right?
Yeah.
And most of them that, at least from our eyes, from our perspective that we're seeing success, were doing like a production brewery distribution type model. And so that was kind of our game, right? We're like, that's what we got to be Uinta. We got to produce a lot of beer and distribute it all over. That's the goal. So we set ourselves up that way with a relatively small tap room, a bunch of flagship beers, the ability to bottle and can and keg beer, but not really the ability to like flex our brewers' muscles and make cool beer that changes all the time. And as you know, because you live in this market, that's all changed in the last 6 years. So you have to be able to be nimble and adjust your beers and change them constantly to build a taproom following. So I'd say we did a pretty good job building a distribution brewery and realized that that's going fine. It just doesn't produce a lot of money. And so we turned that big old ship over the last couple of years, and we're really trying to build a better taproom culture now. Yeah. So,
and I feel like you have a great following in the taproom since then.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even back in the day, we had a good core following, but it's really grown since we've expanded the taproom. We're about three times the size we started. The beers are always rotating, and that's partially thanks to Carson and his efforts to magically find tank space that doesn't exist and like put new beers in the tank. But yeah, we've got a great following here. We've got, you know, we're doing a lot of events, live music, and new beer all the time, and that's changed the game for us.
So speaking of which, where'd you find this gentleman over here?
So Carson Moon, we actually, we've interviewed him twice and didn't hire him the first time. So, but that's mainly because times change. First time we interviewed him, we really needed like a bottom of the, I don't want to say bottom of the barrel, but like an entry level brewer.
A greenhorn.
Somebody that's going to come wash kegs, help us rack kegs, do some of those entry level tasks that you do when you're a brewer. And so that was the first time we interviewed him. And although he was excited about being in the brewing industry in Utah, it wasn't a perfect fit for his situation. And so we declined the first time. And then we had an opening for a head brewer position. And I interviewed him again. And I was like, hey, I think now's a pretty good time. Let's make it happen.
What was the time gap between that, those two interviews?
Carson, I have to tell you that.
You go to therapy for that. So what was that?
A year and a half? 2 years?
No, probably like 9 months.
Oh.
So what were you doing before you became a brewer at Broha?
Directly before, I was running operations for a bartending company.
Okay.
So still flavor stuff, making cocktails, building mixes, running events, bartending a bunch. And then pre-COVID, I was in San Diego brewing at Coronado Brewing.
Oh, hell yeah.
So I was a full-time brewer there. Didn't get to do, it's a production brewery, so I didn't get to do any of the fun stuff.
Plug and play.
I make the same beer 5 days a week, 8-hour shifts, push 100 barrels a shift, call it a day.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot, obviously. Like, that was the third place I was brewing, two really small breweries before that. So I was missing the idea of making cool, fun beers all the time. And when Roja popped up, it did make sense because it is a small production brewery. So
yeah, you knew the production game.
You have the consistency of production,
yeah,
but the availability to do some weird, fun, unique shit. So yeah, it really did. When I moved here...
When was that?
I moved back like right after
COVID. Baxter, are you from Utah originally?
Yeah, I'm from Park City. I grew up in Park City.
Oh, hell yeah. And then what brought you to California?
Beer. Because when I moved, there were 7 breweries in Utah, and I wanted to get into brewing. Gotcha. I was a home brewer. I was bartending at breweries. I helped on the bottling line at Red Rock. I bartended at the old Uinta Pub. And I wanted to get into brewing, and there was just no opportunity because there were literally 7 breweries, I think.
Yeah.
Like 7 or 9 breweries.
Right.
So I was like, where do I go that has a lot of options? So I go to the place that had 170 breweries in the county.
Yeah. So what brought you back to Utah then?
My mom still lived in Park City. So when everybody lost their jobs, I was one of those people.
So you lost your job during COVID?
Yep.
Like everyone else did?
Yep.
And then... Rob, how'd you survive COVID, by the way?
One day at a time.
Yeah.
Similar to you guys,
just kick
probably.
Your ass? Like, I mean, yeah. Because, like, all of a sudden,
absolutely.
The world just.
Now, the fortunate part for us, remember, we launched as a distribution brewery. So we had big distribution channels.
Yeah.
Like, all the chain stores had our beer. And we really did a very small portion of our revenue out of our tap room itself.
Yeah, because you did cans, like, to go beer.
Yeah. We had to go beer, but it was. And then pints, obviously, we had to shut that down right away. But that was a pretty small piece of our revenue. Initially, when COVID hit and nobody was going to the grocery store except to buy 30 packs of domestic beer, that like killed us. And then restaurants shutting down and sending kegs back, obviously, we were like, oh,
damn.
Shit, what do we do with all this beer? Like, where do we, what do you want us to do?
You probably still have beer
this?
In the tanks, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're just full steam ahead, right? Everything's normal until.
Out of
nowhere. 16th or whatever. So we expanded our sort of our to-go sales, moved it into this space, the other half of our tap room, and tried to have some pints eventually. It took us like 4 months and put in a temporary patio and all the stuff that everybody was doing. But honestly, like that distribution sales really drove our revenue. So thankfully we launched that way because you look at a lot of the other breweries in town that were so taproom focused and they had no outlet. They had no way to right. make money because they couldn't invite people in.
Yeah.
So we were pretty fortunate there. Fortunate for that time, although we've got then, you know, we've been destroyed sort of, or just behind the times on what the taproom scene is and what it should be.
Sure.
And the people that are coming in to drink at the taproom. So,
yeah. And then you found Carson after, cause you came back to Utah during COVID. And what was it like to try to be, you obviously wanted to be a brewer, clearly. So in the world where brewing was, seemed like it might've been out the door, what was going through your head during that time?
Well, I was just bartending to make money so I could pay my bills and just kind of waiting. Like I knew it was going to come back. I was still drinking beer. I knew everybody else was still drinking beer.
Yeah.
I was bartending in a mask and we had 6-foot rules for tables and all that crazy stuff. So it was just like, I knew that people wanted it again. So I knew it was a possibility.
Wasn't going to go away forever.
Yeah. So basically just started looking at brewing in Utah again. Now that the availability is much more than it was,
right.
What, 8 years ago now. And just kept my eye open. Just waited for something. I wasn't dead set on, like, I have to be the head brewer, but
yeah.
That was the goal. It's always been the goal.
So what enticed you about Roja Brewing Project?
Just this, it's a cool size. It's the right model in my mind of being able to have some consistency and also change things up and make beers that you don't always make. And
also we had a job opening
and yeah. And I saw a post on Indeed. So
yeah, I'm glad you're here. How long have you been here at Roja?
Like a year and a half now.
A year and a half. Not bad. Not bad at all.
Yeah. I mean, Carson's done some pretty cool stuff for us and it took a commitment out of everybody to get us out of the distribution game and into the taproom game. And we both look at each other sometimes like, well, shit, we're going to run out of that beer if you don't make it this week. And we both say, that's okay.
Ah.
Let's make the cool beer
yeah.
and put it on in the taproom.
Yeah. I say that's okay, and Rob has a mini panic attack and says,
Rob,
okay.
You see numbers,
if you
Yeah,
right?
I'm watching the numbers.
Yeah, but you don't look at the numbers.
No, not the same way.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a difference. You guys kind of balance each other out.
Yeah.
So
sure.
When's it going to become the Rosen Brewing Project? Is that too soon?
As soon as that rolls off the tongue, I would say.
That's an awkward word.
But I feel like this team's great, though. I really do, because you're handling the back end. I hear it, I see it, I watch it, but you're kind of relinquishing. Like, hey, just take care of the beer. Because, Rob, you can't do everything, man.
No, I absolutely can't. And having trustworthy people that can take care of that stuff,
yeah.
It works really good. You know, I've got Cass up front that really manages the tap room. What up, Cass? She's waving.
She's here.
She thinks we need beer, though.
Oh. Bud Light.
We're good. No. So Cass pretty much, we've had a lot of good managers out front, too, but Cass has really, like, jumped in to this new model of bringing events to the tap room, bringing live music to the tap room,
yeah.
And really, like, reintroducing people to what Roja is or what we want to be. So it's been pretty cool. She handles that. Carson's so reliable in the back to keep things moving. He's a head brewer, but he's really, like, a boots-on-the-ground head brewer. So
yeah.
he does spend some time on his computer, like, figuring out production schedule and ordering grain and ordering hops and making sure we have what we need to make the beer. But then later that afternoon, he's down there cleaning a bright tank, you know?
If
that's what has to happen, that's
a good
where
leader
he
leads by example, Carson. I feel like that's who you are. I've known you for a short amount of time, but every time I walk into your brew house, you're always doing something. Like, it's not, yeah, you'll come say hi to me, but you're in the middle of doing something. I've seen you being cleaning tanks, cleaning kegs, moving shit, canning, whatever it is, right? So keep doing what you're doing, my man, because obviously, Rob, trust, like, you got the brew house, man. You got this, and you're producing good beer, and it's gotten better since you've gotten a hold of it. Not that the beer was bad. It's just fine-tuned. It's getting better, and that's what we should always strive for, right? Fine-tuned beer.
Yeah, absolutely, and also the capability to change beer up and bring in new age recipes, like having Carson, who's been in San Diego for a long time and has sort of seen what on the forefront of what brewers are making,
yeah.
And then bringing that back here and being like, yo, people are missing out on this because that beer is so fucking good out there. I want to make that. And I'll be well, we can't. Okay, go ahead.
Because I feel like your tap room has been, you have way more beers on tap than I remember a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I mean, we started with just two beers on tap, then we went to three, and then we would have some variants and things like that, some small batch stuff that would put us up to six taps. But when we decided to ultimately change this model in our tap room, we jumped up to 12 taps, which is still sort of, I would call, like, the bare minimum for a tap room.
Mm.
So I have 12 beers on tap, including our seltzers, which gives a nice gluten-free option. But when we got our bar license about a year ago, that also, like, opened the floodgates for us, because we had five or six high point beers that people would come in, and they're very popular. They see them all over the state, and they'd come in and say, hey, can we try your Chambeau? And I'd say, yeah, just buy a can and you can take it with you.
Yeah,
you
know, at home you can.
Produced, right? That makes sense.
So that was kind of a screwed up part of the business model and the way Utah made caused us to operate.
Still working on that, Utah. We got this.
We're gonna lunge for another 80 years at some point. So the bar license really changed it too. It allowed us to offer cocktails, some great locally crafted canned cocktails and ciders and all the things that you are allowed to have when you have a bar license, including all of our high point beers. So we went from six beers on tap to 12 beers on tap to 18 beers available plus all this other stuff.
Yeah.
So.
And that's really upped the taproom game.
Yeah, it blew the doors open.
Yeah. So what's the biggest hurdle right now for your tap room?
I'll take this one. The biggest hurdle is, as I said, reintroducing people to Roja,
mm-hmm.
because we made beer so available to everybody all over the state that there was no need to ever come to Roja.
Mm.
You could get all of our beers in any grocery store anywhere.
Yeah.
Any liquor store. We worked really hard at that, and we got pretty good at it.
Yeah.
but there was no reason to ever find out where Roja was because I'm just getting my sixer at the Smiths, you know? I'm getting it at the Mav, wherever. And that is that's the biggest challenge for us is retraining people that we have 12 beers on tap. Maybe one or two of those are beers that you can find in the market, but the rest are completely unique to the tap room.
And you have to come to Roja to grab them, right?
You have to get them here. Yep.
I like that. I like how you've kind of honed it in. If you want to try Roja, you got to come to Roja.
Yeah, I mean, we still produce most of those, I would call them like flagship or distribution type beers.
Yeah.
But we've, some of us are less afraid than others, but we've been less afraid to take those flagship beers off the draft lines and say, if you got to have a Back Porch Pale Ale, I've got it available. It's in a can.
Damn good beer, by the way.
It is good beer, but it's available everywhere. Mm-hmm. And if you got to have it, I got it here for you at the bar. But we put this other cool IPA on. We put this other cool brown ale or porter on or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we're not going to offer Back Porch right now.
Right. Right. So, Carson, on that note, because you guys, I feel like Roja is very ale forward at the beginning. Very ale forward.
Oh, completely.
Just, I think, I want to say within a year, you released your first lager. Am I wrong?
So, for the Collab Fest last year was the first lager that we actually had our hands in. And that was, we made a Helles with Desert Edge.
Desert Edge. Fuck it. Was it at Desert Edge?
At Desert Edge.
Was it with Matt?
Yep.
Oh, what a goat. I love that guy.
Yeah.
Shout out Matt.
So, from there, we were like, we need to continue this idea. We need to not let ales run our life. And this was probably me saying I'm willing to tie up a tank for the right amount of time.
Because you were in California, and you're going to tell me that there weren't lagers in California?
No, there absolutely.
So you probably brought some, like, come on, guys.
Well, that was the big thing. I mean, we were just so driven by production. It was like, tie up a tank for 8 weeks?
So what's faster, ales, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what are we going to do if we can't turn three beers through that tank in that amount of time? How are we going to figure that out? And Carson's like, I don't know. We'll figure it out, though.
We'll figure it out. I like that. That's a brewer mentality for sure.
Because
we'll
I'm like, you're the one who cares if we turn this tank three times. Right. I want to make awesome beer that tastes good.
Yeah.
Carson once told me that he wasn't so worried about what happened on that day. He would say, that's a future Carson problem.
Yeah, future Carson deals with a lot of shit.
Oh, Cass is back. Cass.
Oh, hi, Cass.
Hi, Cass.
How are you today? Great. Do you want Cass to come say hi real quick?
What's up, team? Here, pouring the beer. Come and get it.
Fucking love you. No, but that's so future Carson took care of a lot of issues then.
Yeah. So future Carson got to deal with like, oh shit, now we're behind on these two beers.
Sure.
But whatever. So the first lager we made in-house was a Mexican lager. Just...
Is it still a Lone Ranger?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. Guys.
So we released that like right at the beginning
probably
of
like
the year.
Wrong, this perfect, is a, whatever yeah, like the wrong January, time of the season is. Like whenever you wouldn't release a lager, that's when we would
stop.
Put it out.
I'll drink a Mexican lager anytime.
Anytime.
Let's go. Yeah.
That was, I think, the last thing I did on December 31st was finish draining that tank. So I think it came out the week before, but we didn't have enough kegs, so I had to finish draining it on New Year's Eve.
And celebrate your dick off. That's what I learned.
And then drank a bunch of Mexican lager.
Yeah.
It's been our top seller out of the tap room since.
And so going back to lager game, ale game, was it worth it?
Keep the ales rolling. That's what I'm saying.
Boo!
No, it's a balancing act still. Yeah. We keep trying to figure out how to reduce the number of beers, but there's so many cool beers and so many beers that have good distribution networks that it's a balancing act, but we're going to keep the lager game going.
As you should. And I think it's going to, the more styles you get, because in my mind, ales are really easy to make. And as it's coming from a brewer, so I think lagers are more difficult to make.
Yeah.
So if you guys want to prove yourself from the men to the boys or the girls to the ladies, you need to be able to make all styles. And that includes lagers.
Absolutely.
So I want to see a Pilsner out of this place. I want to see a damn good Helles out of this place. And I want to see eventually a thick Bock. Give me a Bock. Tell you what.
Well, I have a Hoppy Pilsner in the tank right now.
Shut the hell up. Let's go. When's that going to be ready?
As soon as he's done lagering it.
Yeah, once I'm ready to
I
put
felt the eye rolls, Rob. Stop.
As soon as three other beers miss their ship date, that's when it'll be
Stop
ready.
Stop thinking about the money. Doesn't matter. It's about the beer and passion.
That's right.
Beer before glory. Think of that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
So Mosaic Dry Hop Pilsner is coming out.
Let's go.
Soon. I'm so excited.
I'm excited for you.
And then another turn of Mexican Lager, Lone Ranger.
And what then, inspired you to be to name this Lone Ranger?
Because it was our only lager, and it's a Mexican beer, and somebody said it one day, and we all kind of giggled, and we're like, damn, that's a good idea.
This is how it happens. You know, you name a lot of beers, I'm sure, mm-hmm. but you spend all this time brainstorming ideas, and someone's like, I don't know, it's sort of our Lone Ranger, and you're like, yeah, that's it. Yeah. We got it.
You don't think of it, but you got the random comment, you're like, that's the one, fuck.
And you nailed it.
Thanks a lot. Scribble.
We were working for hours, and you just came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Kind of how it works.
And then what's the third one? Sorry, I cut you off.
I don't exactly have a plan for the third one, but depending on timing, I want to do a Baltic Porter.
Ooh. That could be really good.
News to me.
I've said it like twice. You just don't
listen. You shit yourself, Rob?
Nope. Just down one leg, not both.
I feel for you. But I like this.
Like I said, confidence in what he's producing and confidence that the other beers, other than the ones we decide to kill off, we'll...
Here's a quote that someone once told me. I don't know who it was. If you brew it, they will come.
Yeah, that's been true. Absolutely true. And I knew that would be true. I just knew it would take this time, like I said, to turn this big old ship.
Yeah, and you have.
And
to
make
the Rosen show.
Right, and retrain all these people. I mean, we still get people that walk in the door and they're like, whoa, am I in the wrong spot? Because this place used to be tiny. And we're like, no, you haven't been here for 2 years. That's what that means. So come on back.
Yeah.
And they're like, where's whatever, back porch? And I'm like, oh, it's in a can. Go ahead.
Yeah.
But we got all these other cool beers, so.
And I think it's really cool what you're doing because I think, Rob, you figured out how to tie in the community as well. So what you've been doing is bringing events to Rohat. And that's very Utah forward. It's very community. It's very... if you want more people to come to support local, then do local shit. So you look at all the other breweries in our family. You got events out the ass. You have live music out the ass. And you have cool shit like the Firkin Fest. Name another Firkin Fest in Utah right now.
There isn't one. I know Epic did one in Denver when they had that tap room and had like over 50 Firkins, which is...
That's like Denver, though.
That's an awesome spot to shoot for.
Yeah, but where's Epic Denver? R.I.P. Unfortunately.
It's unfortunately. Right?
Yeah. I think the last time that I saw multiple Firkins was, I think, at Westside Tavern. Or, sorry, Squaws and Wasatch Tap Room.
That's right.
But besides that, there's not really a Firkin Fest. And I get giddy about it because I get shit. Because Firkins do not do well where I brew from. Like, in Utah County, if it's not made from Diet Coke and sugar, they don't want a Firkin. It's just not sexy. But I love watching someone bring up a cask. Just as a brewer, it's like,
We've seen, and we talked about this at the beginning, we've seen a lot of excitement around that, not just from the consumer side, but from the brewer side. And I thought, I just don't want to abuse these brewers so much and like make them set aside a firkin and figure out what to make and all that. But I've seen pure excitement, like you're showing, you know.
Yeah, I loved it. That you saw me tap it last time. I was so giddy.
Beer spraying everywhere.
You just don't get to do that very often.
It was overcarbed.
But the thing about it is, like, I have all these ideas that I want to put into a beer, but upscaling or doing 10, 12, 8 barrels of it, it's like, if it goes bad, you're sitting on a shitty beer for a while, right?
Yeah, this has been totally our experience in the Firkin. Like, I reached out to Uinta sort of last minute, and they didn't respond, but they actually did respond, and I missed it, and then there was some internal communication problems between the people that I know and me and blah blah blah, but they were like, we definitely want to participate, and I was like, well, you're not on the poster and I didn't promote you at all, and they're like, we don't care, our brewers are so stoked to make
and they
something
were.
Smaller than 120 barrels
and talking to them and watching Ian bring the Firkin, and he's like, I have a story for you, and I'm not gonna talk about the story. If you want to hear the story, we'll talk about it later. But hearing his story of how he traveled the Firkin, the whole thing,
with
I'm like,
strap on it.
I love this story, and like, he was so giddy. I watched him tap that, and he was like, "Yeah,
no, they're jacked about it." And I thought, the last thing a big brewery wants to do is make 10 gallons of weird beer to take over to Roja.
But then that gives the big breweries chance to have that creative freedom and do whatever the fuck they want with 10-ish gallons of beer.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Let's go. And like watching the Salt Flats crew here, like I remember Elizabeth
they love
biting at, chomping at the bit, like I made this beer. Like me and Amanda and the team, like let's go.
I get first pint, and if it's no good,
you guys are the best.
The tap's broken.
But you guys got to keep pushing that because it's really cool.
We're on it.
So I'm forcing you to do this. So my friend, my glass was stolen, so we have to stop for a halfway break, come back, refilled. Because Karsh, you look thirsty too.
Yeah.
And that pizza looks.
I'm always thirsty.
We'll be right back, my friends. Outlaw Distillery's Bourbon Barrel Aged Hot Sauce is back on the shelves. Also, head on over to meet the newest distiller in our Outlaw family, Connor Kelly. With experience from places like High West, Connor helps turn up Outlaw's premium game. Head on over to Outlaw Distillery located at 552nd West, 8360 South, Midvale, Utah for a tour and tasting. Their staff is well-trained and leads with full passion. With homegrown grain to glass, Outlaw Distillery carries some of our favorite weekday sippers, like vanilla bean rum, spiced rum, honey bourbon, and that delicious bourbon whiskey. Trust us when we say it should be outlawed. It's so good. Yeah. Until the next spirits, my friends. Shout out to our sponsors, Clearwater Distilling. Utah County's only distillery is turning heads and quickly making a name for themselves. From whiskey to vodka, their unique innovation transforms the norm with incredible products like the Rene Rimignac, which is an aged French Armagnac with an American rye whiskey twist. Literally one of our favorite showcasers. Or their Scandalous, which is not like Fireball. It's an actual whiskey with quality cinnamon without any sugary taste. Also, Clearwater teams up to do a monthly cigar pairing where you come and get educated on how to properly smoke a cigar while pairing with Clearwater's lovely spirits. For more information, head to clearwaterdistilling.com, hit them up on all social media platforms, or just message us, and we'll get you started on the right path. Open 7 days a week, even on holidays, Clearwater is a must. See you there. Until the next spirits, my friends. All right, family, still here at Roja. Rob, this is the first time we've done an episode here, huh?
Yeah, I thought we covered that in the first half.
I'm just trying to remind you that we covered it in the first half.
We've communicated more about having this podcast than the amount of time it's taken us to do the podcast.
This is true. But I'm going to tell you this right now. Since we've started trying to talk about Roja, because Roja was one of the first beers that I tried showcasing when I first started the podcast. Roja was one of the ones that you can get outside. It was because I started the podcast.
You could get it anywhere.
And then the COVID happened, but I could still get Roja. So
anywhere.
Yes. So Roja I tried to grab, and like I showcased it, right? I tried to talk about it and try to break down the Roja beer at the time. And trying to meet who Roja was, trying to do my own education before I became a brewer to find out where Roja came from. So Roja was one of the first beers I tried to break down. So it's really cool that I can actually sit down with you guys. The beer is, you guys are a way different place in your life as a brewery, as a brew house, and the beer is even better, I think. So, boom.
Right on.
Hell yeah. So now we have, you distributed throughout Utah. You made it a great point to try to get into Utah. Have you tried to go outside of Utah?
Yeah, we did sort of pre-COVID, and then partway through COVID, we launched in southwestern Wyoming. Mm-hmm. So we launched with the Budweiser distributor out there. And I went and made a few sales calls because I was always kind of committed to the process. So if I was going to distribute somewhere, had to be somewhere that I could actually support. I wasn't super interested in sending beer to like Rhode Island if they ordered it or whatever. Just like, oh, cool, we can buy this beer out of Utah. Let's buy some. I wanted someplace that I could support and make sure that we were well represented in that market.
Yeah.
So we did launch in southwestern Wyoming. I have a little cabin outside of Evanston, kind of. And so I was like, well, if we distribute to Rock Springs and Evanston, that's like pretty close to me, and I can make a few sales calls and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So we launched out there, and we distribute out there, I'd say, consistently for about a year. We still have a number of kegs floating around in Wyoming, or probably actually in Utah, that never came back. And we're still partners with that distributor, but our models changed so much, and their needs have changed so much, we really haven't pushed any beer out there in the last couple of years.
Are we looking to get outside of Utah after here?
No, distribution's for the birds, man.
Wow. Bold statement. Could we put that on a shirt real quick?
No, yes, we could. No, I as I said earlier, distribution gave us a big advantage during COVID, and so I don't want to lose the distribution channels that I have. I want to maintain those, but I want to grow my tap room first and actually grow up as a brewery, what I would call like the right way. You build a tap room first, you find out what beers people like, and then you go, oh shit, I think I'll put that one in a can, instead of us who are like, here's five beers in a can and bottles. This is what you're going to like and you're going to buy every week. And then we learn later that people may want to buy something different, or they might want a lager. Don't tell anyone.
What am I drinking? And you guys got those stupid fast beers.
I'm not drinking a lager.
I got a blonde lager.
No, that's our ale lager.
That's an ale lager. Just check on tapped.
Shit.
So yes, we distributed outside of Utah. No, currently we're not planning on growing that distribution until we're more settled in our taproom model. And then if we have some beers that fucking whack, we'll see if we can go out of state again. So we still have those partnerships.
How do you know if beers are going to whack?
Taproom.
Or you guys entered the competitions recently, correct?
Yes.
So Carson, what beers and what competitions have you entered, or competitions have you entered in recently that you can get some feedback to see if your beers do quote unquote whack?
If they fucking whack.
Mm-hmm.
Beer just went to Idaho for the. It used to be called Mountain Brewers Beer Fest. I don't know. That's NABBA? What I still
now they
think
call
it's
the
called
International
the NABBA
Beer Competition or something. They added the word international because they weren't getting enough press.
Mountain
just
Brewers.
Being a national.
Yeah, so I think it's one of the biggest ones in the West Coast, correct?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I think it gets right below GABF. I remember that in the Bend, Oregon one.
Okay.
And I could be wrong. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's pretty big.
Well, yeah. So we just sent four beers to that. So fingers crossed. That'd be cool.
You guys going to the award ceremony by chance, or pouring beer?
We're not pouring beer. We will be at the award ceremony.
Hell yeah.
And if we don't win, I'm going to get drunk again.
Don't say that.
If we do win, I bet he gets drunk again.
Oh, okay. It's like, don't pity drink.
If he does win, he's going to get drunk again some more.
Yeah, I love it. Well,
then I'll be celebratory drunk.
let's hope you guys make some damage, because that's the only way you're going to get some positive or unbiased feedback, from competitions.
Yeah, you do get great feedback. Entering beers, we always think, is an interesting process. I don't know if you want to talk about it here or not at all. You can just zap this part out. Just go ahead. because you're really trying to fit your beer into a style guideline. So you're really drinking the beer and saying, how well does this fit in the style? Not like, oh, I really like this beer. You know, that's not about liking it or thinking that it's cool or that it's got a great profile. It's about how well does this beer fit in this profile?
Yeah.
Right? So it's a bit of a challenge. And because we're on the ale train, a lot of our beers fall into certain categories that are big categories. We do a lot of IPAs. And so those categories are big and they're highly competitive. A lot of people make really, really good IPAs, obviously. So it's just competitive world, and we try to do our best to fit those beers into those style
so
guidelines.
So earlier today I was in Park City and we're talking about how the competition seems to be healthy. So it makes us kind of not necessarily want to kick each other's asses and be better than you, better than you, better than you, but it's like we're trying to make a product, and we're trying to make a product so well that what we make is so good, right? So it's really cool to see, like at the World Beer Cup, we saw three of our breweries, our families, win awards, and each and every single one of them is just as important as the rest of them. Like, it's so cool. It's so cool to see us win in Utah. Like, when you went to, that was the first time in 9 years that they've won a medal. At World Beer Cup on the BrowCon. The first time, I believe it's the first time they won on that system, and that's huge.
Yeah, I think that's
and
what
that team
too.
And that team deserves it. And
that's amazing.
I saw that and like saw the team celebrating it, man, I was so happy for them, right? And then, you know, watching Grid City, they make the fucking best brown ales around.
Yep.
And I've been saying this since day one, and like watching them get the bronze in a brown ale category, that's a UK-driven style.
Classic right? style, yeah.
And, they're absolutely. And Jeremy's kicking ass over there. And then watching TF do more than just make just a fucking Keller beer. Like, they make the best Keller beer, I think, around. But what they did, they won in the juicy category? Are you shitting me? That's a huge category. And then the Brett category, congratulations. That's amazing. So watching our family do a great thing. And you guys, so if you guys were to win in one of these competitions, it speaks for us, the family, like, hell yeah.
Right? Absolutely. Going to the award ceremony up there, I've probably been going for 15 years, 16 years, something like that. But watching, like, the Utah breweries and... I think you're using the word family.
Yeah, I'm trying to, yeah.
Like friends and...
Friends and family.
Friends and family.
I'm lazy and family.
Okay. But just like seeing the people from Utah, this is part of what made me fall in love with craft beer originally. Right. It's like seeing somebody from Red Rock jump up and hug somebody from Uinta because they're so proud
we
of them.
We did it.
Like it makes me a little choked up. Yeah.
And like we had a huge group in Nashville. At the CBC, you're like, hey, listen, guys, and when Utah wins, not if Utah wins, when Utah wins, whoever it is, I'm going to scream my ass off. And they were all warned, and I did.
Yeah, it's, no, that's right on.
It's a great time because we should right celebrate. This is our community. Yeah. So whoever it is, if it's me, I'll probably piss my pants. But then if it's everyone else, I'm going to yell so hard, right?
Yeah, no. And that, like you said, we're all driving each other to make better and better beer. And not just like a better... you know, whatever style beer, but just like different and unique styles and be like, oh, that's cool that I didn't even think of that. Look, what other styles are out there?
It's cool to see Templin win as they're very lager driven.
Yep.
Right. And they've won for their lagers. So like I said earlier, lagers are a difficult style to make. However, them winning for an IPA category. Okay. So you can't make everything. Fuck off. Like, good job. Yep. You know what I mean? It's great.
I would guess they're IPAs, their hazies, their juicies sell out faster than any of their lagers.
And the thing is, I'm not a huge IPA guy. I make it. I know how to make it. I can make it. I'm not a sour person either, personally. That's my preference. Again, we talked about this earlier. I'm a Pacifico guy, Indio guy. Like, I drink lagers. That's just, I want to drink. And we said this earlier today, is like, that's like drinking water. Yeah, I want to drink water that's slightly carbonated that gets me fucked up towards the end. Like that's what I want to do.
Like later, way later in the night.
I don't want 18 glasses of water.
Yeah, I don't want some resin.
And then be kind of drunk.
Yeah, thank you. And go to bed.
And just go.
Right. So talking about making better beers, Carson, I want to talk about what are you bringing to the table to Roja that they haven't had before?
Well, I focus a lot of my brewing personality on... where I really learned how to make beer on a production scale, not a homebrew, not a 5-gallon batch. I started brewing in San Diego. And just, I think Utah is missing out on, you just said you don't like IPAs, but on the actual West Coast IPA style. Everybody keeps, I feel like Utah as a whole is putting out these West Coast IPAs that are still like this old school English style, Northwest style, that. Like, I want to make these really light, really approachable, crazy hoppy beers.
Yeah,
that I feel like Utah is missing. We have the hazy category pretty solidly locked. Everybody makes one or two at least.
Yeah,
and then everybody's IPAs still have too much malt for me. Mm. So that's something that I feel like we've done a bunch of small batch IPAs, 5% draft only stuff.
How big is a small batch for you guys?
The smallest I can do in our system is like 7.5.
Okay.
And then we end up packaging like just over 5 barrels of it.
Cool.
So it's small. Yeah, it's not tiny, but it's small.
More rotation, more practice on it.
But it does have to go into our 30 barrel fermenter. So that hurts.
Oh, I feel for Rob now. Oh, I get it. Rob, I get it.
We're right. Yeah. You're talking about a production game and we got to gobble up a 30 barrel fermenter to make 5 barrels of beer. The I'm going to talk financials again, but the revenue is probably identical.
Just because it all is here.
Yeah.
Because it's all here, but it takes more time to,
you're right,
to receive that.
Yeah. We'll talk about this afterwards, but I got a fix for you guys.
You got a 5-barrel fermenter?
We'll talk about this, actually.
Yeah, so, but just the Southern California West Coast style of beer. is really what I've tried to put a lot of my focus on. Even like I said earlier, like got a dry hop lager coming out soon, which is like not a traditional style.
Right.
That's very much like a new age style lager. So
it's a fake style.
It's a pretend style, but I'm so excited to drink it.
How dare you, gentlemen? Damn you to hell.
But that's okay. I mean,
all beer is a
session
IPA
a fake style? Yeah. But is it one of the biggest in these competitions now?
Yes.
Yeah. Also,
so,
yeah.
I think the biggest category, if I recall, don't give me, I'm going to skew the numbers. The
quote
biggest
David
was
on this.
The hazy or the juicy IPAs. Yeah. It was like 420 something.
Yeah, it's huge.
Entry. What? It was huge. It was gigantic. And then I think Templin Family won on the third biggest one, which was the Juicy IPA, which is 160-something.
Right.
Those 400? Fuck me.
But also, those categories didn't exist 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago.
Right. But that's... So are we brewing to sex appeal? Are we brewing to the consumers? Or are we brewing because
people
are...
We're brewing to the consumers, and then we're trying to stuff them in categories that they don't fit in until... World Beer Cup or NABA is like,
category.
Oh, we've got a whole bunch of entries in the pale ale category that are actually session IPAs because they're way too hoppy for a pale ale category, or way too much hop aroma or whatever,
right?
And no crystal malt,
right.
So let's build a new style.
But I saw Idaho this year because of Grid City. I'm blaming Grid City, but now it's a seltzer hybrid category because
I saw that
Grid City's seltzer. I wouldn't call it a true seltzer, but it's
the rosé one.
Rosé, elderflower, all of them. They're all, but they're fucking beautiful and great, but are they just blackout great?
Yeah.
But are they just.
They don't fit with White Claw.
Static electricity? Yeah,
they
exactly.
They don't fit in that same category.
No. So you got to make a category. So is it bad that we're expanding the palette of.
Not at all. I think that shows a nod to the consumer.
And the craft, I think it's the craft too.
Yeah.
We're crafting beer, and it's like there's other ways to craft beer.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's all good for the industry to build these new styles. And seltzer, what, it's 3 years old or something, the whole idea
the
of seltzer.
Up.
And they always told me when we started to try and enter this market that it's so young, nobody knows what the niches are in the seltzer market, and now we're starting to form some. There's like High Point seltzers, there's health benefit seltzers.
Shut the hell up.
Like,
electrolyte seltzers?
The electrolyte, yeah.
And joint and bone seltzers? Give me those.
Give me one for
mushroom
my gout.
Infused seltzers? Let's go.
For my gout. Yeah, do you have a my feet hurt seltzer?
Right, my ass hurts. Yeah.
So I think, I mean, seltzer's maybe a terrible example because...
Because seltzer's.
Because it's seltzer.
You're not wrong.
Sorry, I inhaled my...
Seltzer.
I'm not drinking seltzer, man.
But Roja's really good at doing seltzers.
Yeah, we make it fired up.
We
today.
Make it...
Because you
I
have a grapefruit
very,
one, you have a black cherry, and you have one more, right?
We make lots, very small batch flavored ones out here on draft, yeah. But seltzer ones, seltzers, we make a good seltzer because it's clean, crisp, dry, you know.
Easy to drink. And when I'm floating the river, I mean, think about it. I want to crush water because I'm dehydrated. I'm in the sun.
Yeah.
And Pacifico's not cutting it, so I'll get a seltzer.
Pacifico's got too much flavor.
Yeah, God. No, you're right, though. So watching these categories blow up, I kind of like the fact that they are opening different categories. But I see the kind of stagnant where... I have to brew to a category. Why can't I just brew to brew? And that's why I kind of like Fisher, because Fisher's like, we have good beer. I know it's good beer. We know it's good beer. And everyone goes and has Fisher beer. All of it. But why do they need to go to a competition and be...
No, that's totally true. You don't have to.
Right.
I remember probably, I'm going to age myself here, but probably like 10 or 12 years ago, we were hanging out with the Ninkasi salesperson at the Idaho Beer Fest.
Oh, hell
at
yeah.
Mountain Brewers. He was the funniest character ever. They, side story, they would drag a trailer for their to set up their own booth, and that trailer had a couch in it, so they set up like a lounge during the day.
That's so cool.
And I was like, where are you staying, bro? Are you camping? He's like, oh no, I sleep on the couch in the trailer. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. But we were asking him, like, oh, do you enter any categories? Like, fuck no. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, none of our beer fits in these categories, and we don't care about winning these.
Mm.
We're just trying to make, like, new, extremely hoppy crazy beers, and they don't fit in these categories, so we don't enter anything. We just show up to pour great beer and have a couch in our lounge.
See, I like that, because like I said earlier, it's beer before glory. So
yeah.
Why I get why some brewers like, I mean, think about it. If Rohat got a medal for one of your beers, do you not think it would drive kind of like people to buy that beer? Let's say when that lager.
I believe I have
wins.
A different opinion. Than,
okay,
than,
I want to hear it. If that Helles or that Lone Ranger wins a medal, a bronze, silver, or gold in whatever competition, and you post it on your wall, hey, this is an award-winning beer, do you think it would upsell? Do you think it would, like...
I think that's pretty short-lived.
You think so?
Unfortunately. I think that the medals are for the brewers.
To validate
not,
them, then?
Not for marketing or the owners.
But I feel like right now, and it's my opinion, and I could be wrong, but... In the marketing community we're in, it seems like medals are just sex appeal. Like, hey, we are good for what we're saying. Like, we do.
No. I think it validates a lot of your efforts and the hard work that the brewers do. But I think from like an owner or marketing standpoint, you get like that initial splash, like, hey, we want a medal. And then a little bit later, you get to be like, don't forget about our medal winning beer.
Yeah.
And then
I'm going to ask this to you. So, what's it like to, if you were to win a medal, what's it going to be for you? Because, Carson, if you win a medal and it's like, I won this medal for a beer I worked hard on, what does that mean to you?
It just means that my work looks good on paper, but if nothing else, like, I'll just be stoked that somebody thinks that my beer is a gold medal.
Yeah,
and somebody will give me a goddamn gold medal for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to down. It's not. I don't want to downplay the value of a medal. So don't take me wrong that way. Like, it just is a validation for a brewer that God, I knew we were making a killer beer here, and they thought so too.
But I feel like
it just puts the stamp on it. Like, yeah, a stamp of approval.
And
good
I was thinking
job.
About it is I. For the competitions I've been entering in, is I really like to hear the feedback. I want to see what can I do better. Right, but if and when I do win that medal, I'll be like, oh shit, okay, I can make good beer. Thank God. Like, I'm just not in this game just to make sugar water just because, right?
Yeah, and like you just said, the getting the feedback is so awesome because these people are drinking your beer completely with no, all they know is the style that you entered it in.
Yeah.
They don't know anything about it. They don't know how big or small or... this or that or what you did, like,
or your history or where you're from.
All they care about is like, does this beer fit in these guidelines?
Yeah.
And like, if you nail that and you get the medal, then like, that is, you did that, good job.
Yeah, validation. I like that.
I mean,
that's why I love when Hams wins like the light lager category or whatever,
because it's the goddamn best light lager.
You made a great light lager.
How dare you guys?
And you validated it. Hams
and PBR,
10,000 Lakes,
Bud Light.
Hams and PBR, man.
Oh, PBR. Okay, I can't argue this.
PBR and Hams are Hams is PBR's older cousin.
Oh, you're not wrong. Okay, I'll give you that one.
And but I will drink 1,000 of them every day.
You're right. But I'm excited to see what hardware, because you guys are still fine-tuning Rohat beer.
Sure.
And it's really cool.
It's always a process.
You also are fine-tuning the environment here at Rohat. I need you guys to keep doing that. Like, that's what you're doing. You guys are making a name for yourself. More and more available to everyone.
Again.
It's really cool. So you guys are doing the Green Loop. Let's talk about the Green Loop real quick.
Okay.
The Green Loop is something you guys have been doing all the month of May, and it's where you guys have like live music, beer, wine, cocktails, and you guys are the sole provider for this event, correct?
The fun juice.
Ooh.
We're the only people who legally are bringing the fun juice.
I like this.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool thing. Just a little background on the Green Loop. It's sort of an experiment that the city is funding because of some complaints that there's not enough green space or public space in downtown Salt Lake.
Okay.
And so they put this sort of pop-up green space in place where they brought down about 200 sapling trees, big, you know, medium-sized trees in containers. They closed off 2nd East between 3rd and 4th South, and they built this, like, pop-up public park. And they're trying to see how, like, how much will the city actually activate this space, or how much will people that work and live in this area activate the space? So they're doing a food truck, I think, almost every day. You'd have to look it up. from like 11 to 2. And then Wednesdays they're doing live music. And then Saturday is sort of their big event. They're doing 2-3 bands, a bar, and a food truck. There's like, you can play bags down there. They've got a
badminton
set.
Badminton?
Set up.
Get out of here.
There's a whole badminton court.
Yeah.
Let's go.
There's a bunch of benches, like just a cool like setup, and you're in the middle of the city, like you're really in the heart of these big huge buildings being built, but you're surrounded by trees and green space kind of. So it's an experiment by the city. They hired a group called Little City. They used to work on these pop-up bars. Their first one was on like 4th West between 7th and 8th South, kind of right by Fisher. And then last year they had one on kind of by the new Slackwater downtown.
Okay.
So these pop-up bars, they'd show up just every Saturday for 5 or 6 weeks. So they hired Little City to do this. And Little City, we've supported for a number of years to either supply them with beer and bartenders to pour that beer, or if they're pouring someone else's beer, we would hold those kegs all week so that they could keep them cold before their event, so they didn't have to run their keg fridge all week. So we've supported them. They came to us this year and they said, hey, do you want to be the sole provider for this? And we said, hell yeah, let's do it.
I love that.
So it's been pretty cool. We just finished our third week of that. We've got two more. We're skipping Memorial Day weekend coming up this week. And then we have June 3rd and June 10th.
Hell yeah. So you're actually going to be doing June 10th and you're going to be doing the Utah Brewers Guild as well?
Well, here's the funny thing. I knew when the Brewers Guild Fest was, and we went back to Terry and said, hey, we probably don't have the people to run both these events, but we want to participate. We'll gladly supply the beer that you need. We'll gladly collab on a beer and supply that, whatever that takes, because we want to support the guild however we can. But we just won't be at the festival to pour beer.
Yeah.
And they said, let's do it. That's fine.
So can we know the secrets? Who are we collaborating with? Who's Rohawk collaborating with? Carson, all you.
We just went down to Moab.
Get out of here.
So we made some beer in Southern Utah.
Hell yeah.
And
hell yeah. Because Southern Utah is great.
Southern Utah is great.
It was great.
Not just south of Salt Lake. That's not great.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just Southern Utah.
All the way down. Yeah, so we went down, made a beer, floated the river.
Hell yeah.
Drank, I don't know, like 19 beers probably.
Between the two of you. Oh, shit.
Yeah, over the whole weekend.
I love that. I'm excited to see what's happening. So will any of the Roja team be at the Brewers Guild?
Probably.
Okay.
I don't think I'll be able to stay away.
This guy.
But, yeah.
Okay, I love it. I like to see what's going on with that. Rob, I have a few more questions for you. What's something you've started this company, you helped start this company, you've seen where it's come, how far it's come, where it's going. What goals do you still have to hit here at Roja before you hang up the boots?
He doesn't put boots on.
Oh.
I do.
You hang up the
Crocs.
He wears his fancy shoes.
Oh, so before you hang up the Crocs.
Ouch. I have boots.
Just kidding. He's helping me package tomorrow.
All right. So the Converse.
No, I do wear Crocs for that. That's why it hurt so much when you said that. For me, like we've had a lot of successes, right? We delivered beer all over the state of Utah, and how cool is it to walk into Harmon's in St. George and pull a six pack of your own beer off the shelf and go, holy shit, that's pretty cool. Why is this so far out of date? You know, things like that. But it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Still. I remember the first time we put beer on the shelf at Whole Foods, and I was just like teary eyed taking a video, and my wife's really like, come on, we're leaving town, let's go. And I'm like, I can't yet. I'm taking a video.
That's really cool.
So we've done a lot of things. We've done a lot of cool things. We've seen a lot of success. But for me to really flee the coop or fly the coop or whatever the saying is, I want to see this tap room booming and like filled with like true beer lovers that realize, I would say again, realize again that Roja is a local company. We're locally owned. We're locally made. and that we're making really cool beers, and you can only get them here at the tap room.
Fuck yeah, I love
and
that.
I want to see that happen, and I'll carry that. I'll carry that distribution flag. You know, continue that on and distribute sure. because I think that's an important part of. You know, you come to the tap room, you have that experience, and that's your real memory of the beer and the brewery. And then you walk into Smith's and you're like, oh, yeah, I got to get me some Rohan. Oh,
those guys.
Yeah, oh, yeah, those guys where I had the best time listening to music and dancing or whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever that memory is, you can.
The Firkenfest.
Yeah, the Firkenfest. That time I got beer sprayed in my eye because David overcarbed his.
Whoa. Let me call Julia out. Julia overcarved that Firkin.
Because that one.
She's listening
that one
right
Firkin
now.
Was overcarbed.
You overcarved that Firkin.
Getting the carb right on a Firkin is not the easiest thing. So, especially if you're stuffing Oreo cookies in it or something.
Oh,
like.
For sure.
Well, let's take a guess.
We give each other shit all the time. That's good. So, Cars, question for you. When it comes to being the head brewer right now, and you have a team behind you, and you have the deal with Rob and the whole front of house, right?
You're trying. Did you say deal with?
I didn't stutter. So you're trying to. You're trying to provide a product for this community. You're trying to do it. I'm assuming you're trying to do it very well. So what else do you need to do to become a bigger and better brewer than you already are today?
Generally, just like talk to people like you. People that know things that I don't know. Hmm. People ask me all the time. They're like, "Oh, you're the master brewer." I'm like, "Hell no!
I'm
not a
so
master
much.
Of this. Yeah. I will never be a master of making beer. There is always something you can learn. There's always something I can do better. But then if I win that gold medal, I'll be like, cool, not changing that beer, suckers.
Nah, always change it, man. Yeah. Always fine tune that.
No,
shit.
So it, but just like, It really just is. It's always a learning process. We're never going to be at the top of our game. We might hit it really well for whatever, one batch or 10 batches or one brand. But like, I never will be completely happy with every single beer on the lineup.
That's a true brewer right there.
I will always change something that I think can make it better.
And hops are changing, malt are changing, yeah. Time of year, environment, wherever you're getting it from, sourcing it from. It's always changing.
At the end of crop year, when you're like, oh, I'm running, like, this is the last bag of these hops, that's going to be different than when you get the brand new fresh one. Like, you can never make everything perfect, but it's just trying to make everything as good as possible and change the stuff that you're not happy with.
You're right. So, Rob, when it comes to collaborations in the community, because you've been really good lately at bringing the community together, and who's someone or some event you haven't collabed with yet that you want to collab with?
Oh, man. I don't know. That's a really hard question to answer, but I sort of feel constantly inspired by all the new breweries in Salt Lake. I mean, I go back to when we launched, right? It was Uinta, Squatters, Wasatch,
Red Rock,
Moab, Desert Edge. There's a handful.
Yeah.
But then everybody else is brand new. And so I'm constantly inspired when I see, like you mentioned, Grid City, the shit that they're doing. And I'm like, man, they're doing cool stuff. Level Crossing always is doing cool stuff. I think Fisher, if they would ever make the time for anyone else. No, I'm just kidding. They come over here all the time. But like Fisher's got a really innovative way to like launch new beers and do new stuff.
Yeah.
Who would I want to collab with? I don't have a good answer to that.
Just maybe multiple
somebody that can make more lagers.
Yeah. I like cars.
Like, if there's anybody that has excess tank space, let's talk.
Empty tanks.
You got empty tanks for 6 to 8 weeks, just let me know.
No, but Garth, the same question goes to you in an aspect. Like, collaboration's huge, and that's our community here in Utah. So who do you want to collab with that you haven't collabed with yet?
I mean, here I've only done one collab. Well,
two.
One that has come out.
Right.
But one... Yeah, I've done two collabs.
Right, but who you want to collab with?
I want to collab with anybody.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. Like I said, I want to learn something that you know that I don't.
You get to go to their brewery. They brew all the beer. You kind of stand around.
Yeah, I get to drink their beer.
Not at my brew house.
That's right. Grain out. Time to grain out.
That's what you do. Grain out.
So, yeah, just, I mean, I'm open to any and all possibilities.
I love that.
I think, like you said, the collaboration is fun. Mm-hmm. It's something unique. It's something different.
Yeah.
And it does build community. I mean, Moab Brewery, to me, is like one of the OGs in Utah. They've been doing this forever. They got their thing down. They distribute more beer than most breweries in the state. And going down there to see how they make that happen and meeting the people that make that happen absolutely blew my mind.
I love that.
I mean, I think I'm allowed to say this, and if not, you can crap it out, but they have to brew about 900 to 1100 times on their 15 barrel system this year to
hit their
their demand. So do the math. That's I don't know, 3 to 4 times a day.
Wow, I didn't even look at that. Fuck me.
They've got tanks everywhere. They run, I mean, they're cowboys in how they run thing, and it's awesome that they make it work. They've got Rainbird running their glycol system. They've got tanks all over the place.
They've got 320 barrel fermenters on a 15 barrel system.
Good God.
That's so much beer from a tiny little system.
Fill that shit up, yeah.
I mean, when they run their canning line, when we run our canning line, we're talking about two pallets of beer that we're producing. When they run their canning line, they're producing 8 pallets of beer every run. And it's just to see that scale in
kind of humbles you in a way.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, these guys will work an 8-9 hour shift just packaging. I'm like, holy shit. You know, we kind of package to start off the day and then we got to do all the other stuff.
And then do the rest of the day. Yeah.
Damn.
Clean the tank, transfer the beers, all the stuff.
Damn.
So I just think it's cool to like get to know those people.
Yeah.
Have another contact in the industry and somebody else you can bounce ideas off at the end of the day. So
we've got two more questions for you guys. Cars, question for you. Brewing aspect. What's something you haven't brewed that you want to brew here at Roja?
Go ahead and make it.
Even if it takes 8 weeks?
8 weeks?
You heard what I said. You're going to take 8 weeks to make it?
Yeah, maybe.
Or
I want to do a Baltic Porter.
I think
that's just like that's a style that... Since I haven't seen it much in Salt Lake since Sea Legs disappeared.
And we still got the putting on the Fritz at Salt Fire. Besides that, though, yeah, you're right.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about
that.
It's
not really
that.
A big
but
style.
Like, I think it's a fun style because everybody loves the Imperial Stout aspect, but it's like it's just a different little tweak on that.
Yeah.
Also, like, just coffee vanilla stouts.
Who doesn't love that?
Just breakfast in a cup.
Right, thank you.
And like way too, like unnecessarily strong.
Breakfast beers. Who doesn't like breakfast beers?
I love a breakfast beer.
Let's go.
A nice 9% Saturday morning beer.
It's like a nap guarantee.
Oh, I love that, yeah.
Yeah.
Put your legs up, it's all good.
It's just a plan on going back to bed kind of beer.
I like that too. So Rob, last question we're going to end today with. Started Roja, had a dream, got into beer, love beer. What's one of the goals that Roja needs to fulfill that you haven't fulfilled yet?
I think, as I said, we've come a long way. But I think financial stability and like a real growth plan, because we grew so heavily in distribution and now we're shifting to taproom. I want to see like some growth consistency. Something I can count on, you know, what's going to happen in June, what's going to happen in July without like absolutely dreading June 1st when all the numbers are at zero again. I want to see that growth and that consistency build as we go forward. So
yeah, as long as the passion's there, brother, I promise that will come.
Thanks for the promise. Can you put that in my wallet?
Yes, money comes and goes, motherfucker. That's all I'm going to say. But beer is still here.
That's
true. We can
still
make beer.
Yep. As someone once told me, like, when the economy's up, beer sales are great. When the economy's down, beer sales are even better.
Yeah, that's right. Because, right, when COVID happened, cars, remember that? Like, we're still drinking beer.
Everybody's still drinking beer.
Yeah, like, duh.
I don't know why everybody got laid off. I still needed to make the beer, damn it.
Sorry, yeah, I don't know. But, gentlemen, I want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedules to sit down with me in the heart of Roja. I've been wanting to do this episode for a long time. And thank you guys so much, because it's really cool to see someone that gives a fuck about our community and making great beer in our community trying to still make a name for themselves, even though you've been in the game for such a long time.
6 years is such a long time.
How old are you, Rob?
I'm 40.
No, he's 21.
21 again.
21 again.
He's just 21 again.
A long
again.
Time.
21 again.
We just broke 21. But it's just fun to see how our community is still trying really hard to make a name for itself and getting bigger and better. And you guys are still trying to get bigger and better, and I love that. Because the second you guys stop getting bigger and better is the time I stop giving up. Like, we give up. You guys are done.
Yeah.
So don't stop doing that. Just keep pushing, keep grinding, and let's meet all the, like, let's all pick brains and just get bigger and better.
Yeah.
Let's get some hardware from Roja, and fuck yeah, Roja. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah. Thank you for coming in to the tap room and finding a time that worked for me. Not the easiest thing.
You're welcome, sir.
I have a pretty regimented kid sports schedule.
Nah, but you're a great father as well, and I see how you've always put your family and your kids first. We've been trying to do this for a while, Rob, and the fact that you're a father first and then take care of a brewer house. It's beautiful. So thank you for being an example to me on that aspect as well. Cars, thanks for sitting down and just talking about beer and being you. Thank you.
Yeah.
And guys, if there's anything I can do for you as a brewer, as a podcaster, I don't know when you're going to call me, but thank you so much and I'll help you. All right.
Note, thank you.
Until the next empty glass, my friends. Cheers. Been another episode of the Tastemasters. Find us on Instagram at @the_Tastemasters, Twitter at @the_Tastemasters, or on Facebook as the Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, DM us for any questions, or leave a review. Tell your friends, and thanks for listening. Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at @Fuse_Audio.